We're talking about an herbal supplement that is sold as an energy booster, mood enhancer, pain reliever, and more. We're finding out what the medical community has to tell us about kratom. You might also call it kratom. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is an extract from the leaves of an evergreen tree grown in Southeast Asia. State lawmakers had considered a bill this session to legalize it. Do you know of kratom or have tried it? Do you turn to natural remedies for pain? It's 800-642-1234. Dr. Ritu Bhatnagar is an addiction psychiatrist and medical co-director of the New Start Addiction Service at Unity Health Meritor. She is president of the Wisconsin Society of Addiction Medicine. Dr. Bhatnagar, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, introduce us to kratom and how this extract affects the body. What can you tell us?
Sure. Before I do that, I just want to add a couple of things about myself. I have also a public health degree, and I'm a parent and a member of my community. So my perspective that you're going to hear today is informed by all of these experiences.
Thank you.
And I want to be really clear that as we continue talking today, that any views I express are mine and not those of my employer.
Very good. Thank you so much for that.
So my approach to understanding kratom is grounded in principles that are from a fact-based public health and safety standpoint. I am primarily interested in the health of my patients and our community. So from that approach, kratom is, as you mentioned, it's a tropical tree that's native to Southeast Asia, and the leaves contain compounds that do have the psychotropic or mind-altering effects. And there are different varieties of it. The research is not clear yet about the differences in these varieties.
So when did you hear about it, see it? How did it come to you as you in your practice?
Sure. So I actually heard about it first at an addiction psychiatry conference in 2013 as an emerging health concern for addiction professionals. And then I went back and started looking more into this and found out that we know it's been gaining popularity in the U.S. since 2011 because of reports to poison control and admissions to hospitals.
And you mentioned 2013, it became illegal in Wisconsin in that year. Is there an illegal market, do you see, for this health extract?
So this is a very interesting question because the legality of a substance is something that is decided by lawmakers. The health and safety concerns are my purview and my interest.
Mm-hmm.
As an addiction psychiatrist, I take care of people who are using all sorts of substances, some legal, some illegal. And so, yes, to answer your question, it appears by the very virtue of the fact that it's illegal here in Wisconsin, there is an illegal market for it.
What do you think the role should be of the U.S. Food and Drug Administration in this moment? There are no FDA-approved uses for kratom. The agency has received concerning reports about the safety of it. And their commissioner for regulatory affairs last May said, quote, "There is substantial concern regarding the safety of kratom, the risk it may pose to public health, and its potential for abuse." What do you want to see out of the FDA?
This is a very interesting perspective and a question with far-reaching questions and answers to if the longer that we look at it, the more that we start to uncover about how all of these agencies work. I would really like to see some very clear guidelines and guidance that is based on public health, the science, and the evidence, and not supporting or influenced unduly by corporate interests or lobbying firms.
If you're just joining us, we're discussing kratom, this health extract, with Dr. Ritu Bhatnagar. She's an addiction psychiatrist, president of the Wisconsin Society of Addiction Medicine. Have you ever taken kratom? Should kratom be legalized in Wisconsin? How should healthcare providers balance the potential risks to public health? 800-642-1234 to join in. So can you explain a little bit? There's been, a long list of things that this herbal extract has claims of, like relieving pain, enhancing mood, reducing opioid withdrawal. does kratom do these things?
And again, much of what we know about kratom is anecdotal and also some science-based. And so I will review with you what I know about it from both of these, as well as from reputable sources like the National Institutes of Drug Abuse, that is a taxpayer-funded, transparent organization. Looked at and stated very clearly on their website about it that at low doses, kratom has stimulant-like properties, like cocaine. At higher doses, it has opioid-like properties, like opium. It can also cause uncomfortable and sometimes dangerous side effects, like both cocaine and opium together. So all of this depends on the person and the dose. It's not as clear-cut as sometimes the representation of it in the media can be.
I think I had, on the stimulant effects, I think I had read some comparisons to coffee. Can you draw any parallels there?
So it is in the same general botanical category as the coffee plant. And so that is, I think, how those comparisons get drawn. In terms of its impact on the brain, it's a quite different compound than caffeine. From coffee, we know that there are a lot of different chemicals that make up kratom, the plant, and we are just starting to learn more about these things. It has been researched for many years. The active compound was actually identified in the 20s in the West.
In the 1920s?
That's right. It was, from a Western standpoint, a Dutch botanist actually described it in 1839, but it's been used in Thailand for many years before that. So we've continued to learn more since then, since the 20s, when mitragynine, which was identified as one of the active compounds in it, and more research was put into it in the 60s and 70s because people were looking for new pain relief methods. And so more has been even learned about it. Different compounds within it have been identified as the science has been able to look at it since the 1990s. And each layer of this intriguing plant tells us that there are lots of different effects that we are just learning about. So we do not know everything about it. The pharmacology is not clearly understood at this point. I just want to be very clear about that.
Yes. How would you describe the state of the research today? And what do you find intriguing yourself about this plant?
Well, what I find intriguing about it is that people are assuming when they come in, and I hear about it from the people I take care of, that they think it is helping their opioid withdrawal. They think that it is something that is beneficial to them. And my concern is that they could really just be replacing one addiction with another. And that's part of the intriguing part to me, is that in the lower doses, as I said, has those stimulating properties, the higher doses, opioid-like properties, and the sort of effective dose that we're looking for in people is not clearly known. So for me to be able to advise people about it is very challenging, because it is the individual response is going to vary significantly, and there is a lot of variation in response as well as side effect to this compound.
How do people ingest it most commonly?
It's used most commonly, according to NIDA, as a pill in capsule or extract form. And again, in this form, it's really hard to know. It's just a powder that you see in the capsule, a brown powder. So it's hard to know what variety of plant it originated from, or the country of origin even. And some people chew the leaves or brew the leaves as a tea.
So that would be really problematic to know exactly what it is you're ingesting, since there are varieties of this plant, and certainly you may not even know the strength of what it is.
That's exactly my concern from a medical standpoint, and it's sometimes even sold as a green powder in packets labeled not for human consumption, or mixed in with bath salts or other herbal supplements. And sometimes the ingredients, as we know, on those herbal supplements are not clearly delineated. And there's real concern about there being contamination with heavy metals and other contaminants in the plants when they are processed. We don't know anything about how they're being processed, in what capacity, or how they're being distributed either.
So as you describe it first being described in the 1839, 1920s. There's more research about it. What do you want researchers to look at today? What should be the focal point of trying to understand kratom?
You know, I think the science, that we have the capacity to start to understand it. Do we have the bandwidth, and do we have the unbiased funding to do it? So we know in psychiatry, psychedelics that were just a decade or two ago considered off limits, like ketamine, psilocybin, MDMA, they are being studied for their scientific effect, mechanism, and safety to treat bona fide conditions that people are struggling with and suffering from. We're now developing protocols using these hallucinogenics, as they're called now, and psychedelics. We're researching this and developing protocols and really studying everything from the pharmacology to the pharmacokinetics within the human body. And we are using these effectively and finding that there is a benefit. So when kratom is similarly studied, I think we can use what we've been doing in science with ketamine and psilocybin and MDMA and use that same sort of scrutiny and rigorous scientific research to study kratom in the same way and see where would its use be appropriate and how as a treatment for what society is struggling with.
So what I'm hearing from you is that it should really follow a similar path that researchers have taken with psychedelic drugs and hallucinogenic compounds. Is that right?
That's right. That rigorous scientific research is needed. And, if I felt that kratom would be an effective tool right now in our fight with the opioid epidemic, I would be a strong advocate for it. Hmm. But I don't think the science is there yet. In fact, there are concerning reports about its safety.
Addiction psychiatrist Ritu Bhatnagar explaining health effects of the supplement kratom, where researchers are at with it. Should the Food and Drug Administration crack down on kratom for medicinal and therapeutic uses? Should kratom be legalized in Wisconsin or not? Did you weigh in on the state legislation recently and the push to legalize it? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Dr. Bhatnagar here on the Ideas Network. The U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration, the DEA, has listed kratom as a drug and chemical of concern. We're learning about kratom with perspective from a physician on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The DEA's description says the leaves from the tropical tree kratom in Southeast Asia causes stimulant and sedative effects in different doses. Are you familiar with kratom? What do you want to know about its effects on the body? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Dr. Ritu Bhatnagar leads the Wisconsin Society of Addiction Medicine and is with us for about 9 more minutes. Dr. Bhatnagar, we also heard from Maddie in De Pere, called in, couldn't stay with us. And Maddie was wondering about who is promoting, who's pushing the legalization of kratom. And I know that enters the political realm, which is politics, is not the focus of medicine, obviously. But what concerns you about the possibility of the legalization of kratom in Wisconsin?
Thank you for that question, Maddie. That is actually a very important and healthy question to be asking. Where is the push for the legalization coming from? We know that there is an American Kratom Association that has been very active in drafting legislation and been very effective in getting some of that legislation passed in many different states. My concern is that they are not promoting an unbiased perspective or all the facts that we are finding out from a medical community and a medical perspective from the literature. We started with case reports. Now we have quite a few. There's even been a coining of the term kratom use disorder based on the challenges that we've seen. And this is information that is not getting into the public sphere. And so my concern is that in the push to legalize this substance without effective information, without enough and sufficient information about its safety, we are really putting public health well below the concern for corporate interests and profits. And I agree, medicine does not do much with politics historically. However, when I am taking care of a person and I see that things are that are happening around me and in their lives are being affected by policies, from a medical standpoint, that is the place from which I advocate for my patients. And so I think it's actually very, very important to pay attention to what where is the push coming from? Where is the funding coming from?
Are there other substances like kratom that have other other pushes, other special interests that are backing a substance before the research catches up? Is kratom unique?
Well, we could say historically, looking at tobacco, for instance, there was a push for that. And more recently, we have found out that the clear and present dangers of tobacco are very well known. Nobody contests that, but it was not a part of that that plant, that product that was made clear to people. The same can be said for the cannabis and marijuana legislation that's been coming down the pike as well. Where is the data for its safety? As I know we were talking about kratom and not marijuana, so I'm going to redirect a little bit. But my concern is that we've seen this time and again where public health interests and becomes a partisan concern, and I haven't quite figured out why public health and safety are political issues and not something that we are able to decouple and really think about how do we take care of the health of our population as the starting point for any law.
Let's bring on a call now. Joe is joining us from Eau Claire. Joe, hi, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I vehemently disagree with your guest's position on illegalizing kratom. It is by far and away much safer as an opiate alternative than other substances that addicts can resort to. And it just creates a larger black market for unhealthy, or I should say more unhealthy or unhealthier situations
like, example, people take.
For example, right now there's a huge fentanyl problem in the United States. The Chinese could make it very cheaply, and they started pressing their fentanyl in the form of OxyContin pills. They look identical to OxyContin, except sometimes they're a different color. And because addicts have to go to illicit and sometimes unethical drug dealers to get their substances, it doesn't come with a warning label saying this is not OxyContin.
And so we should be focusing more on these dangerous substances. I want to get the reaction of Dr. Bhatnagar. What would you make of what Joe is saying there?
Well, you know, as an addiction psychiatrist, I am all too familiar with the opioid epidemic and the influence of fentanyl into the current supply of many substances, not just opioids. It's a very, very dangerous time. And my heart absolutely goes out to this society right now and to the people that are in my community, because I have been all too familiar with death as the outcome, often involving people that are far too healthy and far too young. So I absolutely hear the concern that Joe is expressing about the safety of the drugs that are out there for people who are struggling with addiction. What I want to back up, though, and say is that it's very, very important to know and state very clearly, we do have effective FDA-approved medications that are safe, have been studied, and are available to treat opioid addiction right now. Mm. It's really a matter of access to this treatment. So I know that when people are struggling and they are looking for any solution, this is what ends up happening, is a lot of families are already struggling. They're really desperate. They're looking for anything. And my concern is that the way that the marketing is happening is it's really preying on this desperation for an easy fix. And I feel like it's not an easy fix. It comes with its very own real and present dangers. There, in fact, have been reports very clearly of overdoses involving kratom alone, but also in combination with other substances. So the idea that it is safer is not, I don't think it's a valid argument from which to start talking about legalization. It's about how do we get people access to the treatments that we know are safe and effective and already out there.
Dr. Bhatnagar, thank you so much for this conversation. Thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about this issue. I think the society has looked for happiness in a lot of different ways, and we get it confused with pleasure. And this is something that if we can help people think a little bit differently about their suffering, that they are very real and that they're experiencing, but how can we find a different way through this and not resort to a fad? Every few years, we hear there's a new cure for cancer or something else, but I think we really want to adopt an attitude of healthy skepticism so that we don't get swayed by the hopes, but stay grounded in the science.
Dr. Ritu Bhatnagar, addiction psychiatrist, president of the Wisconsin Society of Addiction Medicine. If you or someone needs help, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration runs a free confidential hotline. That number is 1-800-662-HELP. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.